So my name is Mark Wilson-Thomas, and I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio IDE team. I look after the Visual Studio editor, but I'm part of the team that looks after all of the core infrastructure that all the experiences inside Visual Studio live on. So my piece of that's the editor, but though you'll see several other pieces that we'll talk about today. So I want to be the, I think, probably the seventh person to welcome you to San Francisco and to Build after the count in the keynotes. I hope you all enjoyed them. I'm hoping that I'll justify the fact that I'm currently standing between you and your lunch by being here today to talk about some great stuff that the team that I'm part of has been working on to make your experience in Visual Studio 2015 better. So they made me put this slide in early. I just really want to emphasize that it's great to get your feedback, and your evaluations will really count. And we do actually read every single one of them and tweak and touch what we talk about as a result. So what you say matters. Enough said. Here's our agenda for today. In the next hour, we're going to be spending some time looking at the changes we've been making in Visual Studio 2015. And I'm going to be focusing particularly on things that we've done to help you find and fix errors in your code, find and fix issues in your code. But we'll cover a whole bunch of stuff as well that is around how we've done that in a way that is personalized to your needs and to the devices that you work on, and also takes into account the kinds of services that you have to work with in the world that you're building apps in today. And so let's get started with that. First up, I want to talk a little bit about the Visual Studio product family in 2015. So these are the new editions of Visual Studio that will be available in the 2015 timeframe. I'm sure some of you have probably seen all of this before. It's been available for quite some time, and in fact, actually, there's a link at the bottom there that you can refer to get more details. But what I really want to emphasize here is that we've been simplifying the choices that you have to make when you decide which Visual Studio edition to use. So if you're working in a non-enterprise environment and you're looking for a free product to work with, then Visual Studio Community is your answer, okay? And you're probably all aware, but just in case you're not, Visual Studio 2015 Community also supports extensions. So you can use all your favorite extensions from the VS ecosystem with the product. And so you're no longer stuck with not being able to do that, which you didn't used to be able to do in the Express SKUs. We've simplified the for-pay lineup. The Professional and Enterprise are now the only two paid editions. And if you want to see what the differences between those are, I really do suggest you hit up that link there, because enumerating them here would be very, very dull. So it's important that you understand that your choices are simplified, and you don't have to spend as much time scratching your head before you get started. Talking of getting started, one of the ways in which we've made Visual Studio sort of a place that is much more customized to your needs and much more personalized to your needs is we've started to really work on simplifying and customizing setup, okay? What you'll see when you install the release candidate, which you'll have access to today, is a smaller default core set of items are set up in the default install of Visual Studio. And we're working to make that footprint smaller still. And the idea there is, if you don't work with SQL Server, or you don't work with C++, you shouldn't have to pay the tax of installing that on your disk and maintaining it going forward, which means that it should actually have a good impact both in terms of your own disk footprint, but also in terms of the experience that you get when you update Visual Studio as well. So we don't have to take care of as many bits if you don't lay them down in the first place. What that means is that there are more choices available. So when you get to the optional dialog, if you're not finding the thing that you need present when you install, in RC, the story is that you need to go and install it through the optional features dialog. We are thinking about some other possibilities there, and we'd be interested to hear your feedback on what kind of experience you might like for things that aren't installed out of the box. But what we're putting forth now is, if you want to find it and it's not installed by default, go hit up the options, and you can do this change scenario as well through add remove programs. But we think it's better that you have a smaller core, long story short. We're also supporting a whole lot more platforms. I think if you've been kind of staying awake in the keynotes, and I really hope you have, because I thought it was a pretty exciting one. You'll notice we're supporting a whole lot more platforms out of the box than we have in previous versions of Visual Studio. And by that, I mean programs, platforms that we're targeting. So notably, for instance, we are now supporting Android out of the box. That is not a small piece of work, and is actually something you're going to want to opt into. But those platforms are a broader set than they've ever been in the past. However, we still have kept our previous policy and kind of pattern of being side-by-side compatible with previous versions of Visual Studio. So I don't want you guys to be afraid to go ahead and install the RC. There are plenty of caveats and comments on what you need to think about there. But in broad terms, we are side-by-side compatible, and we do test for that scenario. So you should be able to stick this on your machine right alongside Visual Studio 2013, for instance, and have no problems trying it out. And that's an important scenario for us, because we want to make sure that we get all of your feedback, and we realize that having to have a special machine is not necessarily the easiest way for you to give that feedback. There are other options if you're in an environment that's really locked down, or you have production machines, or you're feeling cautious in one way or another. You can get hold of Azure Virtual Machines too, but please do hit up the release candidate links to get the full details on that. But we are side-by-side compatible, and as I alluded to earlier, we are working very hard to factor Visual Studio in such a way, in terms of our packaging, to make sure that it is in units that can be updated more cleanly and more quickly. What that means is you should experience, when we rev to put out some new piece of tooling, a lot of the time you're going to experience a much quicker update and a much smaller download for those Visual Studio updates. So that's just something to watch out for when we ship those first updates. And as you know, we're on this regular update cadence now, and that we hope will make a big difference to you. So you get a customized Visual Studio install experience. That personalization, that making of your Visual Studio, also extends to what we do with your settings and services. And this is where I'm going to hop into some demos. But first off, I want to ask a quick show of hands. How many of you ever sign in to Visual Studio using that little box in the top right-hand corner? Probably about half, just on a quick squint, because the lights are real bright in here. But it's not surprising to me that about half of you do, and that's great. But what I think you'll see in this next demo is that in 2015, there are a whole lot more reasons why you want to sign in to Visual Studio. So this is the release candidate build of Visual Studio 2015, and here's the sign-in box for those of you who obviously hadn't spotted it before or bothered using it. That's fine. I'm actually going to go ahead and sign in here. And what I'm going to do is, you can see I've previously been using another account here, but I'm going to use my Microsoft account. And this is actually a work or school account, to give it its proper name. That's what the official term is, but it's the account I used to sign on at work. We've heard a lot of feedback from various folks that it's very important for them not to have a separate live ID from the one that they use to sign in at work. And you see here that this is actually going to impose on me all of the same security requirements that I would have. We have two-factor authentication at Microsoft, so I have to use a virtual smart card here. And I'm going to sign on. But I'm signing on here with my work account, and that's something that we know a lot of enterprise folks have particularly been asking for. Once I do log in, though, what's really been the point of the exercise? So you'll see that it's now logged in with my work account. I'm going to pop open the account manager page here just to give you a few pointers. You'll see that I've signed into what's known as my personalization account, and that kind of gives you the first clue as to what we've been using this thing for. So those of you who've been using it before have probably found that it roams a certain number of settings in Visual Studio, so that when you sign in on multiple boxes, you don't have to go ahead and do all that tedious work of configuring how you like the editor set up, which windows you like open, etc. That's a real pain, and we recognize that people don't enjoy that a lot, and that, since 2013, has been a feature. We've broadened the number of things that we're actually roaming now, but much more interesting now is that we've also provided, if you look at this area here, a set of other accounts. And you'll see another one has just appeared in as the roaming settings came online. And that is actually a Microsoft account that I'm also using. The nice thing about Visual Studio 2015 is we provide the ability for you to connect up to your personalization account here in the Account Manager as many as you want accounts that you use for other things. So let's say, for instance, that you have a live account that's associated with your MSDN subscription, or a live account that you're using in a particular project for connecting to Azure services. Any of those accounts can now be chained up, so you only have to log in once, and that's the big deal here. That's the goal, so that we provide a single sign-in experience to Visual Studio that manages all of the kinds of accounts that you care about with respect to your development activities. And we'll see how that plays out. If we take a look over here in Server Explorer, you'll see that occasionally, when you first sign in, you will find that you have to sign in to each account, and that's fine. And the reason for that is because we don't want to be caching your credentials when you log out. We don't want to leave those lying around on the machine. So since I just signed in, I should never see that dialog that I just saw again. Okay? Once, as long as I stay signed into Visual Studio, all of the accounts that I've signed into will remain in place. So you can see that it can see all of my Azure subscriptions. And that means that when I crack open, for instance, this web apps node, it will actually go ahead and find the test database. This one is actually attached to my MSDN subscription that I access through that live account, that Microsoft account. So I can have as many of those accounts as I need to access as many services as I wish to access. And we hope that you'll find that to be a useful feature. Another feature that we've added, which I think you'll find hopefully useful in terms of being personalized to the way you use the world. How many of you systematically ignore notifications in Visual Studio? Yeah, I figured as much. and the reason for that, we recognize that there's been a certain amount of noise and lack of personalization in the notifications experience, so that you didn't necessarily see things that you cared about. Okay, well, in 2015, the world is changing. What you're seeing here, don't worry, the world hasn't suddenly moved forward to the middle of next year or whenever that might happen. Visual Studio 2015 Update 1 is not about to be released. But what we're seeing here is what the new notifications experience looks like. I've just put some sample items into the notification hub here for you to see. And you'll see a couple of things here. Firstly, we've introduced some categorization. You can see that there's a category extensions and products updates, and a category here that's a tentative one we're thinking about around troubleshooting. So what another benefit of signing in, by the way, is that when you sign in, it gives us the opportunity when you use Send a Smile, which is this little guy up here, if you haven't used him to send feedback, to actually get in touch with you and close the loop about some problems that you might be seeing. Anyway, that's an aside. We now have categories in the notifications window. And that should hopefully help you to find the things that you care about most. This guy up at the top is what we call a promoted notification. And those are really for things that we think everybody needs to know and that are incredibly high importance. So obviously, we think our updates are really important. But the kinds of things you'd also see up there is if your license is about to expire, you would see that. And you'd also see the red notification flag up in the top when that happens. One final piece of personalization, though, is the always ignore button. Okay, so if you've decided that, you know, and I really don't think you should decide this, but for sake of argument, let's say that you just aren't interested in Application Insights. I think that would be a mistake, but your call. I can say I don't want to see updates like that in the future. I can hit always ignore. And it's actually got a little bit I assure here, but it's now in an always ignored state. And as soon as I quit the notifications window, I'll never see updates of that class again. So what that allows you to do is tune down your experience so you just see stuff that you care about. And hopefully we'll find, because we take telemetry on this kind of thing, we'll actually find out what it is you guys really care about too, so it'll help us to know what's going on. So that's notifications. I just want to flip quickly back to the slides here. So you see that it works with your work or school account, and not only do we roam your settings, but we also roam your connected services. And notifications, we've reduced the clutter, and hopefully we've allowed you to see only what you care about. Another way that we're working to make sure that we work with all of your devices and are personalized to the device world that you're living in is that we've added, we've been working since Visual Studio 2013 to improve our high DPI support. Now, I see a number of you are packing Surface 3s, awesome, and there are a lot of high DPI devices out on the market today. More and more people are working on them, and we know that we want to provide a first-class experience there. We did a bunch of work in 2013 to get ourselves better in that world, and one of the things that you'll probably notice if you're running on a high DPI device with 2015 is that we've really upped the ante on icons. Now, I hope you can see that the bar, the toolbar at the top is not so nice as the one at the bottom. There are some nice improvements in clarity and crispness on those icons at high DPI. And that's something you'll see throughout the product because this is actually a service that we have within Visual Studio that allows everyone who works inside the Visual Studio environment to pick up icons at high DPI, nice crisp icons. So you should see that improvement spreading throughout the product. Another way that we're taking into account your particular device preferences is better shown in a demo. Now, I personally have a laptop here that I work on all the time when I'm out and about, or maybe I'm at home, and that's my typical environment for a lot of the time. But I also at work have a multimon setup. Now, I'm sure that's not untypical, right? A lot of you guys are probably working on multimon setups as well. One of the things that's a real royal pain when I'm working with Visual Studio is to have to keep rearranging all of my tool windows so that they work with the particular environment that I'm working on. And so we've got a nice new feature here which allows you to deal with exactly that scenario. So you'll see here on the window menu, we have a new feature that allows you to save a window layout. Okay? And that would allow me, for instance, if I chose save window layout here, I could make a named window layout, and that would store away all of the layouts of all of the tool windows that are part of Visual Studio. Now, rather than create a new one here, I've actually made a couple already, because the flip side of that is you can also apply them dynamically. So let's suppose that I'm back at my big multimon setup. I can just say Control-Alt-2 and fire this up, and you can see now I've actually, it doesn't look great on this screen, and that's not surprising because it's currently running on a laptop, but just to illustrate that it picked up all of my tool windows there. And I can have as many of those named layouts as I want. I can go nuts on that. If I have different ways of working in, you know, perhaps when I'm working in a designer, I use a certain set of tool windows, and when I'm working in another mode, I've got my debugging view or my SQL type view or you name it. If you've got different tool windows that you like to have up, and you want to switch quickly and easily between those, super easy to do that now. So I'm actually going to go ahead and switch back to my laptop environment. And you can see that's as easy as hitting a button and very, very straightforward to use. The nice thing is those are actually roamed, although the setting, of course, is not. Think about it for a while, you'll figure that one out. yeah, it'd be a bad idea if we roamed the setting itself. But we do roam the those different layouts that you choose to create, as long as you are signed into Visual Studio. So create as many as you like, party on, hope you enjoy them. Now, here's one that requires me to use my hands, okay? We have just enabled, in 2015, touch in the Visual Studio Editor. Okay, so I can pinch to zoom. I can double tap to select. I can select a row by tapping here in the margin. So that selects the whole row. And I can, of course, tap and hold, which was always enabled. The thing with tap and hold is that you're now into a menu that isn't quite so touch friendly. So we recognize that we've stretch the envelope to a certain degree. The scenario that we had in mind here is that we think it's really important for scenarios where you're, say, on a plane or a train and you're using a touch machine and you want to do some reading and scrolling and moving around inside of your code. We think it's really important that we enable that first. However, we do think that, you know, touch going forward is probably going to do more than that in the IDE, and so we'd be interested to hear from you guys about what you think is most important for you next. If you care about the touch scenario, my email address and my Twitter handle are on the front of this slide, so please do go ahead and send me some mail on that. We'd love to hear about what you think comes next in the touch world, but sure enough, it works, and we hope you like that. So now to the heart of today's discussion. And what I really want to show you here is how we've done some work in Visual Studio to improve the find-fix cycle, as we call it. So how we work with finding and fixing issues in your code. I'm going to actually take a short detour through a few other little bits and pieces in the editor, but we will get to finding and fixing stuff fairly quickly. So please, when I switch back, don't obsess about the red squiggle that you'll be seeing. You're all going to obsess about it now. There's a red squiggle right there. There it is. You can't help yourself, can you? Anyhow, so first I would like to say that one of the tenets that we've always had, really since Visual Studio 2012, is that we want to enable you to navigate around your code and work in your code without having to go off into separate tool windows and distract yourself with other things. So how many of you guys have ever used Peek? Yeah, about half again. Peek is one of my favorite editor features for this reason. So here I've got a method that I'm going to take a quick look at. Now imagine I'm working on a brand new code base here. I'm just trying to understand how it's constructed. And typically in pre-Peek days, what you would have done is perhaps you'd have done F12 to go to definition, and you'd have been hitting up an F12 chain, and there'd have been a giant wad of windows open that were between you and your final destination. Well, with Peek, we can simply go Alt F12, he says, with some confidence. Peek definition. And we will get a peek straight into the method. Okay? And the nice thing about Peek, the really nice thing, is it doesn't stop there. So for instance, if I decide I'm interested in this event handler, I can peek again. And Peek starts up a nice little breadcrumb trail up at the top here. And those, by the way, if you haven't discovered them, there's a keyboard shortcut for backing and forthing through those. And that's Control-Alt and minus to go back, and Control-Alt-Plus to go forward. So those are a couple of really useful shortcuts if you're working with Peek. I know lots of folks who work with the editor really want to keep their hands off the mouse, and so we're pretty keen on keyboard shortcuts, which is why I'm kind of disappointed that Alt-F12 is playing up on this machine at this point. Nevertheless, so Peek is a great experience for keeping you in context. So you can always see where you started your journey through the code, and you can always track back and forth without ever losing that context. And that principle is one that we think is very useful in lots of other places too. And so we've taken the idea and run with it in a couple of other places. And I'm just going to show you some of those now. So this is a XAML project. I'm going to crack open the XAML designer here. I'm just going to select one of these buttons, and you'll notice that I have some styles associated with those buttons here. Now, wouldn't it be neat if, you know what's coming now, don't you? Wouldn't it be neat if you could peek to definition for styles too? Furthermore, wouldn't it be neat if you could just live edit in those and see the results on the designer? I think that's pretty nice. So peek to definition works right here in the XAML designer, which is great. No more getting lost in endless chains of dictionaries. This should make life a whole lot easier for the XAML developer, we hope. Next thing that we've done with peek, if I just go ahead here and set a breakpoint on this line, and you may have seen this in some of the earlier demos, but if you hadn't noticed it, let's suppose now that I want to set some conditional breakpoints. We've now invented something that you might call a peek dialogue. Okay? So if you've used the debug settings setup before, you'll probably have noticed that it comes up in a dialog box that probably obscures the code that you're working on. Now, the nice thing about a peek is that it sits in line. It's an interlinear thing. It sits between your lines of code, and it never, ever obscures the code that you were looking at when you invoked it. So same benefits apply here. What this means is now, if I'm wanting to set some conditions here, I can tell that I'm actually in the context of something that's going to have these variables. So I can actually start typing meaningful conditionals here that actually refer to the code that I'm working in without actually losing the code that I need to refer to. We think that's important. So that's another use of Peek that you'll see in 2015. And we hope you like that one too. Another place where we work hard to ensure that we don't lose your context whilst you're looking at your code is in giving you understanding of your code via code lens. Okay, so you probably may have noticed, if you've not seen it before, code lens is up here above in a C-sharp file. It's here above the method heading. Okay, and you can see that I can actually look at things like changes, references, and so forth. When I click that guy, once again, this is supported by a keyboard shortcut, which is Alt and then the number of the lens that you're using, because the code lens is an extensible mechanism. You can see now that I've got my changes. I mean, there, obviously, this is a demo project on a demo Git repo, so they're not terribly interesting changes, but you could imagine in a real-world project there, you'd be seeing the changes from your team, so you can get that context on what's happening in your project. And there's also a lens for looking at unit test pass coverage and that kind of thing. There's the reference one, which is probably the one that a lot of people use the most, which allows you to dive off to the references to methods and so forth. But all of those allow you, as a uniform set, to keep your focus on the code whilst actually understanding more about the code. So you never have to leave in order to find out more. That's our goal there. Well, that's a 2013 feature, you're probably saying. And Mark, why are you showing me this in a 2015 talk? Well, the world has changed. And if you looked carefully at that style dictionary, well, at the XAML file, you might have noticed that down at the bottom, there's a new kind of lens, okay? And I'll show it magnified here for a moment, then I'll actually go and actuate it. And you can see here that what it's showing me is some of that file-level information from Git that was present in the code lens stuff for C-sharp and VB files. So this is available now for, if it's not a C-sharp or VB file, so it doesn't have traditional code lens, the file-based lens is available for things like check-in history and so forth, and more stuff that's that sort of file scope will probably be coming to the file-based lens here. This is good news for C++, XAML, HTML, JavaScript, and all of those other places where you don't have code lens today. So you can get that contextual information without ever having to leave your code file. I hope that's going to help. Now, the moment you've been waiting for, I'm going to get back to the red squiggles. So clearly, this project has some errors in it. And that's not an uncommon state for me. You may be smarter than I am. I'm sure you are. But it's pretty common to have errors and issues in your code. What we've tried to do in Visual Studio 2015 is to deliver an experience that lets you both find and fix those issues more easily than you could before. So let's take a look at what that looks like. Firstly, you'll notice here in the error list that there are a few small changes that you may have noticed. Firstly, you'll see that we now have a link here in the code column. More on that in a moment. But you'll also find that when we double-click on an item here, I'm going to just quickly zoom in, you'll see that a light bulb has appeared on the line that I navigated to. So the light bulb is a new 2015 feature. If you used the Roslyn preview bits before, you may have seen it in an earlier iteration there. But this is now a platform feature that is available across all the languages, not just the ones supported by the Roslyn compiler. Light bulbs are a new way of exposing fixes and quick actions that we can take on our code. Okay, so let's go and hit that guy. What does he show us? A little bit of a tour of the anatomy here. First, you'll see that on the left here, I'm seeing a whole list of things that I could do to fix the problem that I was experiencing. So there are various different options. And as I move down through them in a moment, you'll see that the preview, which is over on the right-hand side, actually shows me what I'm going to get when I take that action. So you'll see here, in this case, I'm getting a green line for paint.utils, which is going to be added to the top of my code. And I can have complete confidence then in what that action is going to take, particularly for single file cases. And in many cases, fixes are single file, so you can pretty much take them based only on what you're seeing in that preview. We think that's useful. So I'll hit control dot, which is actually for some reason, my keyboard is not playing ball. Control dot is your friend. It's the control period. It's actually the keyboard shortcut, and you'll see that it's when we hover over the light bulb, it tells us about that. It allows us very quickly to move through items from the keyboard. So I can, from the error list, I just go F8 to move through my errors, for instance. And as I move onto a new line, I will actually find myself able to immediately take the action. I'm going to use the mouse here because for some reason my keyboard is playing up. Control dot would get me straight to here. Then I can move around within the menu to choose the action that I want and then quickly take it just by hitting enter. Okay? So imagine if, and in most cases we hope this is true, the commonest action will be at the top of the list. So to fix, all I need to do is F8 in the error list, control dot to bring up the light bulb, and enter. And my problem is fixed. Okay? So that's a real quick workflow. F8, control dot, enter. Or, if it's not the first choice, F8, control dot, move up and down with your arrow keys, select the one you want, hit enter. So we really tried to think about the keyboard interaction here because, you know, we know that most of you guys work hands off the mouse a lot of the time, and so we want to make sure that works. But as you've seen also, it works great with the mouse as well. So that's my first issue solved. I'm now going to roll down. And as I roll down, I notice, because I've got pretty good eyes, that this color here has got a slightly different colorization than the similar tokens elsewhere in the code. Now, this is not as aggressive as a red squiggle, so hopefully it didn't draw your eye straight away. But as you're working, you might notice things like this coming up. And this is a thing of class suggestion. Okay, so basically, if you're seeing one of these, we don't want to shout at you about this because it's not going to prevent you from compiling your code. But what it's trying to tell you is there's a thing that could improve here if you want to take a look and try fixing it. So we'll try that, and it's the same light bulb. You can see it's telling us that the cast is redundant, which you probably spotted already. And here we're seeing that very same experience. Okay, what we have is the remove unnecessary cast, which is the only option we have available to us here. You can see the preview is telling us exactly what we're going to get in this single file. And in this case, it's kind of interesting to note that we've also got the option of taking that action at a different scope. Okay, so we can take that action, and this also works with the keyboard. I can arrow key my way down into here and tab around, so that works just great. I could choose to take that action at the whole solution scope, and in fact, that's actually what I'm going to do. So I hit solution, and we get the preview changes dialog, which you've probably seen before, which deals with the multi-file case and allows us to see exactly what changes are being made where in the code. And that would basically fix all the redundant casts that are present in my code instead of just the one. So I can apply that, and everything's done. So you can see that we're dealing now with two classes of thing. There's the error class of thing, where we'll show you a hover-based light bulb hovering over the squiggle. Or in cases where it's not so important that we convey information to you aggressively, we have a more subtle treatment, but still by hovering or by moving onto that line and hitting control dot, you'll see the light bulb appear. So keyboard or mouse works just great for suggestions or for errors and for dealing with those. The nice thing about these light bulbs, by the way, in passing, and I should mention this because I think some of you probably be development leads and folks who build libraries in the audience, is that the light bulb mechanism is used by the Roslyn compiler to expose an extensibility point. And the key extensibility point that it exposes is called analyzers. Analyzers are a really cool new feature in the Roslyn compiler system. And what they allow you to do is to package up sets of rules about things that might go wrong in your library, or common coding mistakes, anti-patterns, if you like. So what that means is, as a library author or as a dev lead who sees common problems in a particular project, people are always making this code mistake, what you can do is package up a way of detecting those issues, having them shown up by the IDE, and allowing your developers not only to find them, but also to fix them, because you can also package up the fix. So the analyzers allow you to package up a fix as well. So if you're working with managed languages, Visual Basic and C#, then the Analyzer framework is something I really recommend you take a look at. And there's another talk that you'll see in my references section, which is by Dustin Campbell, and he'll give you a walkthrough of how to build one of those. It's really not that hard to construct an analyzer. The whole Lightbulb framework is in fact extensible and is used by a number of other languages too. So it's not just managed languages, as I say, that have the Lightbulbs, but Roslyn have probably taken them the furthest. The managed languages experience is probably the most advanced at this point. So what I'm going to do now is run some code analysis. Now, while I'm doing that, I want an honesty poll here. How many of you have ever done this? You've worked pretty hard on getting the functionality of your project up and running. Everything's great. And you get to, I don't know, probably a few weeks out from shipping, and somebody thinks it would be a great idea to run code analysis on the solution. Uh-huh. And what happens then is a whole bunch of bugs get raised, right? They're all in the system, and what actually then happens is they're systematically ignored because they're not stopping anything from shipping, okay? I don't know if you've ever seen that happen before, but, you know, I think it's not that uncommon. So, running code analysis in a static way has some hazards in that regard. I mentioned analyzers earlier, and the other key advantage of analyzers is that they run, and I'm going to show you this right now by reintroducing that redundant cast. You see that the light bulb appeared immediately as soon as I typed. Analyzers run live. They don't require me to batch things up. Okay, they don't require me to run code analysis in a batch way. Now, we're moving a lot of things out of the static analysis world into the analyzer's world, as you might expect, to take advantage of this feature, because this means that as you're typing, you get the information you need, and not only that, you get the fix, which is pretty cool. But there's still going to be a ton of things that are still living in analyzers that run statically. So in the static analysis world, just run code analysis again. The static analysis world has changed in Visual Studio 2015 too. So you might notice that all my code analysis results here are now showing up in the error list. Well, why is that? Okay. Well, we like to think of the error list now as being kind of your one-stop shop for everything that might be wrong or need tweaking or touching in your code. We don't want to have you go to two separate places in order to figure things out. And in the past, the code analysis window was this separate thing. It ran over here. It was kind of not integrated. And that didn't really make a ton of sense, particularly in the light of the fact that a lot of analysis is now going to be done live anyway, and that's the trend in analysis. So we thought it would be much better if you actually had a way to see all of the things that might be your to-do list, if you like, for the code. Located in one spot, and that's the error list. Now, you might be saying, well, heck, now I've got all this junk in my error list. I didn't want that. Well, we thought about that too. And the other thing that we've done in the error list here, I mean, there's actually a whole bunch of things that we've done in the error list, but the thing that I think you'll find useful is we've actually enabled, I'm just going to add a column here, the ability to dynamically filter your error list so that you can actually home in on the thing that you care about most. So in this case, for instance, let's suppose that somebody had done that big static analysis run and we'd got a bunch of bugs, and I decided that actually what I really want to do is focus in on the naming bugs. You can see we've implemented Excel-style filtering here. So if you've ever used Excel tables, you'll have seen that they have this notion of being able to filter each column based on its contents. So we've done the same thing. Followed the same paradigm, and what we can see here is that we have a certain number of naming issues, and I'm going to focus in on those first. And I'm kind of interested in this first one, which is that I've got this utils namespace, and the tool is saying, well, you really shouldn't use utils, it's an abbreviation. How do I know that, by the way? Well, I can hit my code link here, okay? And one of the universal features that we brought in the error list now is you're going to be able to get a link to the error in question, as much as we can find it, right from within the error list. And you can hit that up either by clicking the code link or hitting F1 at anywhere when you're selecting an error in the error list. Now, there are going to be cases where you don't actually have a direct match. For instance, if you're using someone else's library that actually doesn't have static documentation built for it yet. And in those cases, we know that oftentimes you're going to be hitting up the internet. You're maybe going to do a Bing search for that or a search with that other search engine. You're going to be searching. You're probably going to have to strip out a bunch of stuff. Your usual workflow might be copy and paste from the error list, pop it into some search box, and hit return. And you'll get some search results, and that'll be great, and it might help you to solve your error. What we've actually done now in 2015 is you'll notice that we send searches straight to Bing. Okay, we actually formulate that search string for you. We're working with the Bing team to actually make that search ever more appropriate to the code that you're working on. So we actually send a little bit of context across there as well, like the kind of project that you're working on, so that we can get better search results. So you should find that even when it's not in, like it is in this case, getting a piece of static content that we have on our documentation, you should get pretty decent help to help you fix those errors that you're seeing. Anyway, all that aside, it says identifiers should be spelled correctly, and utils is some kind of abbreviation, so I shouldn't be doing that. So what I'm going to do is just quickly go to definition on my utils here. And I'm going to show you one extra superpower for the light bulb. Okay? So light bulbs, I mentioned, are great for fixing things. So you've already seen that workflow. What I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to start to try and fix this up. So I should really be calling this utilities. Now, you'll notice golem. I should really delete that guy. There's something very odd about my keyboard right at the moment. I'm going to carry on. In this case, you can see that what's happened is there's a dotted line around my token that I'm typing. And what that means is that it started suggesting that I might want to be in a rename refactor session, okay? Because it's recognized that utilities is obviously being a namespace, is going to be littered all over my code. And what I really want to do is have a rename refactor session. And the place where that lives now is on the light bulb. Okay, so you get that situation, you're typing. You hit control dot, you see the light bulb, you initiate a rename session. And in that case, I just took it with no preview, and it's actually gone ahead and done the job. So rename refactor, which is an on-demand action, you can see there is now being shown also through the light bulb. And that means we've been able to declutter the right-click context menu in the editor a little bit, because there were a whole bunch of that class of action that were sitting on there. So hopefully it'll be a wee bit easier to parse that list now. You'll see if you do hit right-click that we remind you that everything's on quick actions now by putting the light bulb up at the top. So if you take one thing away from here today, if you're a user of this kind of code fixing thing, control dot is your new best friend. Okay, so try it, see what you think. One final piece that I want to touch on, I'm going to control comma and navigate to another method that is here in my code. And here you'll see that this is another instance of some of the changes that we made in Visual Studio 2013. Things like navigate to work in these inline windows now rather than being in a tool window. So you don't actually have to lose the context of your code as you're navigating around. So control comma there gets me into navigate to, and I can quickly move around. You see it's actually bringing up a provisional view on each of these methods as I go. So there I had one that was in the i.cs, not particularly interesting, but you'll notice it's appeared in a provisional tab up on the top right there. That's not a real tab. It won't stay open when I navigate, so it's going to go away. But make hovering prototype is the method I want to work on today. I'm going to take a quick look. And I notice that I have some code here that I think could use a little bit of refactoring. And I might want to extract a method here. Same thing applies. Okay, so I once again have selected some code. And I can control dot or just hit this. And I can use extract method. And you can see we're getting all of the nice preview there that's telling us exactly what's going to happen when we extract that method. I can go ahead and extract it. And I'm immediately into a rename session, which allows me to name not only the new method that I've extracted, but also the instantiation of it. So I'm going to say add points. And when I hit enter, that session is complete. Okay, so that's just a nice new feature that the managed languages folks have come up with that hooks nicely into the light bulb. So light bulbs are very much active in the managed languages world, but you'll also find some of them in C++. There are some great examples there. So for instance, if you're working in a header file today in C++, you start defining signature of a method, and you want to go do the implementation, there's a light bulb that helps you do that as well. So where you're working across two files, in fact, that one actually leverages Peek, so it's pretty cool. And lets you type in that method as you go. Talking of C++, if you're a code analysis guy and you use C++, I recognize I'm talking to a relatively small crowd here, but if you're using code analysis in C++, you might think, well, gosh, how on earth are they going to fit all of that lovely detail that I used to get in my code analysis window into that tiny six-line box at the bottom of the screen? And the answer is, we are not. We're not, because we've actually put it in a better place, a place that is hopefully much more useful to you. So you'll notice here in my error list, if I just zoom in a little bit, there's a new little icon there that looks like an arrow pointing out of a box. It's a promotion type of a thing. And if I hit that guy when I've done some code analysis, as I have on this project, for cases where there is dense content that relates to your code, we've put them now into this editor-hosted environment. And what that means is it's right next to the code that it relates to. Okay, so oftentimes with these things, you're wanting to refer back and forth. In this case, it's a formal proof of why I'm using uninitialized memory in this case, and it actually steps me through it. But these analysis situations are quite typically like this, where you have a detailed explanation of something. And you might need a little time to work through that. So not only can you work through it right next to the code that it refers to, you can also, if you want to keep it hanging around for a while, pop it out to a tool window and park it somewhere so that you can work on that thing for an extended period and move it to a location that you might prefer. So what that shows you there is that your one-stop shop for error, for all things analysis and errors is the error list. It works across multiple languages. In many cases, we provide you with fixes that will help you to fix the issues you're finding. And we're also providing you with the code link to provide you with some more information about the errors that you're hitting. We hope that that'll really help you as you go about fixing errors. So I already mentioned that this is an extensible thing. You can write your own light bulbs should you choose to do so. If you're interested in that, please do come and see me on the Visual Studio stand or drop me a line. They're a relatively straightforward thing to construct. If you're a managed languages person, by far the easiest way to address them is to use the analyzers framework that I referred to earlier. Another point that a lot of people realize about the editor, but not everyone has seen, is that the editor itself is highly extensible. And what we've found is that we've got an awful lot of folks constructing all kinds of extensions to Visual Studio that address the editor. So famously, good examples of that would be ReSharper, which I'm sure a lot of you, if you're managed languages users, are already using. There are plenty of other examples out there. And one that comes from our own internal world is created by the Bing team. Have any of you come across Bing Developer Assistant? A few hands out there. But I think after this, you might want to go and take a look at it. What I'm going to do here is just as a final thing, show you a feature. Control-Alt-F1. That's not what I wanted to show you. I'm going to have to bring it up this way. The Bing guys have been constructing a great feature that allows you to search code samples, but you can invoke that thing from pretty much anywhere. So here, let's say, I want to work to create a new save method for my paint utility that I've been constructing. And I want to say save WPF canvas as JPEG. And I hit that thing up. And what it will do here, and in fact, if I'd been able to use Control-Alt-F1, it would have come up in a nice window inside the editor, is it can take me to code snippets from all over the internet and allow me to quickly capture them and place them into my code. So this will hit up typical places like Stack Overflow. It also looks for relevant projects on GitHub samples and so forth, and will allow me to select a piece of code that I want to use, copy it, and paste it right into my code to start using it. And that search is very much aware of the project type that I'm working in, so it provides samples that are actually relevant to the thing I'm working on, rather than just doing a plain old search on a simple search engine. So that's a way in which the Bing guys have added value to the editor experience by providing you with that kind of contextual thing that gives you a way of staying inside the editor. Now, I know I didn't show it inside the editor. Trust me, if the keyboard on this thing had been working correctly, Control-Alt-F1 would have got me to a beautiful little window that sits inside the editor that lets me do exactly the same search you just saw me do in a tool window there, or in a document window. And so I'd encourage you to check out all the great extensions that are on the extensions gallery through the extensions manager, and see what they can do to add value to your editing experience too. And of course, now that Community Edition exists, you can do all of that for free. One final thing. I mentioned CodeLens earlier on, and one of the pieces of feedback that we heard repeatedly from customers was that you really wished that thing wasn't just in Ultimate. The good news, it's not anymore. We heard you, it's gonna be in Pro for 2015 going forward. So you're gonna be able to use CodeLens in Pro. So we're coming to the end now, and I just want to encourage you to use one of the many channels of sharing feedback for Visual Studio. We have lots of channels, but one of them I really want to highlight is Send a Smile. Has anyone sent a smile? Yeah, quite a few. A frown? Yeah, a few, I'm sure. I read all of the frowns and smiles that have anything to do with the editor. It's one of the things that I spend a lot of time on. We do take that feedback extremely seriously, and you know, bugs get raised, things get changed as a result of it. So please do use Send a Smile. It's really getting richer and richer every time we update. Its capabilities include the ability to grab screen grabs and so forth. It's also getting clever at doing things like grabbing dumps in the cases of crash scenarios, other issues like that. So we're enhancing that feature more and more with every update to make sure that we have a great channel to make sure we understand what's going on with you and with your feedback. There's also User Voice, which, as you saw with the last slide, has been successfully used to persuade us to do things that matter to you guys. So that's a great place for suggestions. It's good because it lets you vote things up and down, so you can use the community to leverage your feedback. In that case, the one we did had 3,500 votes, so we knew it was trending for folks, and we took some notice of that. User Voice is a great place. Connect is another great place to raise things that are more of the class of bugs. That gives you a more of a back and forth channel with us, so that you can actually hear feedback about what's happening with your bug. Although, watch this space with Send a Smile. We're hoping to make that a little bit more back and forth too. So now you've seen this talk, there are a whole bunch of things I really want to recommend that you do with some of the rest of your time at Build, and I'm going to stop very shortly so that there's a few minutes for questions. The analyzers I've already banged on about, so I won't bang on about them anymore, but please go see Dustin's talk on that. He's also got a great talk on the C# and VB enhancements. If you're a managed languages person, go see that. That'll tell you everything you need to know, not only about the new IDE features like the rename refactoring and so forth, but also about language features that they've been working on in C# 6 and VB 14. There's also a great session on extensions. Please do go get the RC. Give us feedback via Send a Smile, and do try out our friends at Bing's Bing Developer Assistant. It's a great little feature in an extension. Let them know what you think. There's a nice link there that'll let you get it. And now I want to go to questions. So please do come to the microphones if you have a question, and speak clearly and slowly so that everyone can hear. Thank you. Any questions? Please do take the mic. Yeah. So go ahead, on the left here.
Hi, is there any mechanism whereby I can select a block of code, and when I copy it, all of the references become fully qualified, and then when I paste it, only the ones that I don't have using statements for remain fully qualified?
That's a really awesome feature. I love the idea. I'm not aware of one right now. It sounds like the kind of thing that might be an extension capability that we could perhaps have one of our extensions work on. But I'm not aware of one that does that. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you want to basically have it strip out fully qualified stuff or add it when it goes to a target that requires the full qualification.
Yes.
I don't think we have anything that does that right now, but that sounds a really nice idea. Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Dylan. I'm a little tall for this, so I'll hold this up. One of the things with Visual Studio, I think it's a tremendous IDE. Probably, I've been developing for about 15 years, and I find it's very solid.
Cool. Thanks.
But when it comes to doing things such as like markup and more like less not like .NET or server side stuff, I still feel it's almost like not overkill, but it doesn't feel as lean and light as I want if I'm just doing markup and a lot of client-side styling. Is there anything that you guys would be looking at to make it a little more of a choice than maybe using something like Sublime or...
One of the things that hopefully you saw in the keynote this morning was one option that's coming around there is the new Visual Studio Code environment, which provides a super lightweight environment. And I know there are sessions here at Build about that. But we're also interested to think about whether there's actually something that we could do inside Visual Studio in the future about that. So I'm interested to hear that piece of feedback. I think there are lots of folks who like the really super lightweight environment. And just to ask a question back in return, and I'd love to chat with you, where I'm going to be on the Visual Studio stand in the Cloud Platform Tools area later, so if you want to pop by, that'd be great. I think we may have scope for a lightweight environment even within the Visual Studio area too in possible future. So I'm wondering whether your goal there is the style of editing where you're literally just hitting up files, almost using file association and popping a file open in the editor. You really don't care very much, maybe even about solutions and projects, particularly in the new world where many things don't even have them. And you're much more interested in just a quick opening editor, right?
Yeah, I mean, community does look good. I haven't played with it yet, so maybe that would be a solution. But if you are doing a lot of server side, it would be nice just to maybe toggle.
So now I'm hearing another story, which is kind of the idea that perhaps there are just too many features, and you just want to see the ones that relate to the thing that you're working on. Am I hearing you right there?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's also something we've been talking about. So that's good feedback. We don't have anything right now. It looks like we now have something at both ends of the spectrum, a super lightweight thing in Visual Studio Code, and then the full IDE in the main product.
But, yeah, maybe even on startup, like instead of with the IDE, when you do the initial setup, it's like you're going to be doing more web, C#.
Yep.
Maybe
sort
each
of a
time
profile-y
you boot,
thing,
maybe
yeah.
you get an option to say boot in this mode, and then that way it is your lightweight or it is a heavier.
Yeah, I like the idea. I think it's something we definitely need to discuss for future releases. So thanks.
Yeah, and this looks great. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Hi. I'm assuming that a lot of the features for like the CodePeak and whatnot require you to do like if you have multiple projects to have like a project reference between them to be able to like directly navigate to that code.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, you know, when you want to have things that are modular, you set up multiple solutions, but then you do assembly references in between them. And I would assume that this code peak would not work with assembly references, right?
Well, that's actually a question that's better for the compiler guys, but I think that's definitely a scenario that they're aware of and one that they've been working on making work.
Because it's really annoying a lot of times when you get all these features when you're... I mean, you own both pieces of code, but for structural purposes, you have to make them as assembly references.
Absolutely, and I'm pretty certain that's one that they've addressed, but don't count on my word for it. It would be great for you to head over to Dustin's session.
So where are they at?
They're in, this is, Dustin's session would be a great place to go to ask that question. But they're also on the stands as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, but yeah, that's absolutely a scenario that they care about, I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any more questions, folks? I want to thank you for your time and have a great build.